So I'm hearing you kind of articulate that you've lost the front ground, right? That you've lost that cutting edge, that ability to be out in front. And you're also addressing this issue of the inability to get the kind of talent that you need or support the talent you have.
Support the talent we have.
Okay.
For lack of focus of this body.
Okay.
We're five stations in the five largest markets, media markets in the country, but we have no ability to communicate in the 21st century. We have unlimited, unrealized potential to be one of the most important venues for progressive, left of center, political and cultural ideas, and we are imploding rather than expanding. And I associate myself with Susan Young's remarks about the governance of the foundation completely strangling its ability to move forward.
And if I can, prior to coming here, I did the best that I could to, nice ring, it's very groovy. Prior to coming here, not being an expert in your organization, did everything that I could to read as much as I could in terms of your previous strategic plans, look at your financial trending, and I also read your bylaws. And I just want to share with you, you're crippled by those bylaws. You're all working in an incredibly challenging compliance environment. So I don't want to remove the responsibility from that from you, but I want to empathize that you really have a challenge here, that your bylaws are not supporting your ability to govern. Right, that's a challenge.
Sherry copied what I had down, and I just want to point that out to everybody. I agree with much that Sherry just said because she copied off my piece of paper, and what Susan Young also said earlier. We are a radio station network with a wonderful mission involving all nature of opinions in public affairs, news, music, arts, and culture, struggling to remain relevant and move forward, and under the blanket of unnecessarily cumbersome bylaws that you were just discussing, and a governance and policy board that sometimes gets confused and thinks that it is supposed to be a day-to-day management board.
Thank you.
We are.
Thank you. Go ahead. You got it,
Bill. No, I think we are in the midst of a rebirth. In the midst of being re-equipped with the tools mm-hmm. for this birth. And there is a Chinese character that means crises, but the same character also means opportunity.
Yep. Yeah.
And that's where I think we are as well. And I think that we are addressing the key issues and will soon show the dividends of being able to take advantage of the opportunities.
Great. That's good. We were due for some optimism going around the table. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks for coming. As an independent media organization, I think we are positioned right now, in my opinion, we were always positioned in a good place to tell the truth about exactly what is going on all over the world. How we're executing that, that's a different story. I think in this environment and with this Obama administration, who's very friendly towards not-for-profits, I think we need to take advantage of finding out how we can, you know, I'm a big one on getting stimulus money. I think we need someone to do some development work, and as a board, we need to figure out how we can close ranks, forget about our differences, I've often said that, and raise some money for the foundation because the finances are our biggest problem. And the squabbling certainly does not help. We're a democracy and not an oligarchy.
Thank you.
Well, I feel we've reached a critical point between opportunity and disaster. Trying to balance ourselves between money and listeners on one side and community and programmers on the other. We have the opportunity always to change people's lives through access to our medium, but at the same time, we need to change people's minds through changing our programs and trying to get this balance between this participatory democracy and effective management is what's going to determine our future. So
that's an excellent point. Like, where, how do you structure that line to really, you know, keep both of those things, I think, is a real challenge and central to your moving forward. Thank you.
Yeah. I'm not sure what to this would take another week to think about, actually, but I think the problem here is that the board has not defined its function yet, or we have differing ideas of what it means. We were saddled with a model that did not stress the governance function. And I realized that when our new IED came in and made some very decisive actions. And the idea of an HR director, which we have been crying for months, if not years, I realized that these are the kinds of things that we should have been doing and not getting involved in the day-to-day governance problems that have caused us so much difficulty. So, yes, I think raising our sights, repositioning our sense of ourselves and what it is that we need to do and can do and must do. And for some of it, we need training, and for some of it, we just need to refocus and get off the dime. So I think if we, as soon as we define our work better, we will progress a lot better.
So that's gaining that scope of authority and influence, governance versus management, national versus local. Is that what you're
addressing? I think we agree in terms of our position in the world. It's right. Our position vis-a-vis, you know, the mail clerks we don't quite get.
Got it. Yeah. And that causes problems. Sure. So that's great.
If you want your mail.
Nice.
Well, I see the role of this network is to provide a platform for the voices that are going to transform this society into something that we, well, it actually has a future. And I think the most of us feel that. I think we all do feel that. And that I think it empowers a certain kind of rigidness about what has to be done. I think that there is a tension in the organization between control at the stations and the PNB, which you've heard out here. Well, you weren't here, but it's been very, very loud in this. My own sense is that this organization can't run without the PNB actually being in charge. That tension has to be worked out, and that we need to get over our own sense of having to be right and having to be important if we're going to work together to make that happen.
Thank you.
I think part of your question had to do with where we see ourselves in the market. And so in responding to that, I would agree with those who say that we're not optimizing our potential in market terms. But I think that's also thinking about things in those terms while we kind of have to in a practical sense. A part of the problem have led to what I see as a big problem we're facing fundamentally is mission creep. We've been caught in a paradigm that's compelled us, certainly in my experience on the local board and the national board over the last several years, of our budgets expanding, metastasizing even. So we're moving away from the original principles of Pacifica, that is to provide a voice for marginal people in the community. Our challenge now, which we obviously have to grapple with, is to, you know, how do we grow the audience? But when we say that, there's a tension, as other people said, between growing the audience for the sake of expanding the Pacific, you know, expanding the Pacifica's footprint or making it more relevant, and expanding the audience for the sake of raising more money to feed the superstructure that we have, which is not sustainable. part of what we're facing now is that the structure of Pacifica, as it is now, is not sustainable. And what we have to grapple with going forward is how to reimagine ourselves to make it work.
So you see one of the main challenges actually being structural, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. A quick question, because you articulated the mission separate from how I understand it. So can somebody give me the mission?
Who has it on their...
Maybe somebody?
Laptop.
I thought it was something along the lines of justice and equality can be achieved through broadcasting.
I'll just read it. The purposes of the foundation, as stated in Article 2 of the Articles of Incorporation, are as follows. To establish a foundation organized and operated exclusively for educational purposes, no part of the net earnings of which inures to the benefit of any member of the foundation. To establish and operate for educational purposes in such manner that the facilities involved shall be as nearly self-sustaining as possible, one or more radio broadcasting stations licensed by the Federal Communications Commission and subject to their operation to the regulatory actions of the Commission under the Federal Communications Act of 1934 as amended. In radio broadcasting operations to encourage and provide outlets for the creative skills and energies of the community to conduct classes and workshops in the writing and producing of drama, to establish awards and scholarships for creative writing, to offer performance facilities to amateur instrumentalists, choral groups, orchestral groups, and music students, and to promote and aid other creative activities which will serve the cultural welfare of the community. In radio broadcasting operations to engage in any activity that shall contribute to a lasting understanding between nations and between the individuals of all nations, races, creeds, and colors, to gather and disseminate information on the causes of conflict between any and all such groups, and through any and all means compatible with the purposes of this foundation to promote the study of political and economic problems and of the causes of religious, philosophical, and racial antagonisms. In radio broadcasting operations...
Actually, I'm going to just... How much longer does it go?
Not much longer, but there are two parts that are important.
I was just checking.
In radio broadcasting operations to promote the full distribution of public information, to obtain access to sources of news not commonly brought together in the same medium, and to employ such varied sources in the public presentation of accurate, objective, comprehensive news on all matters vitally affecting the community. I'd also like to read two other short sections. Section 3, which is principles, which states, the foundation is committed to peace and social justice, and seeks to involve in its governance and operations individuals committed to these principles. And then the next section is commitment to diversity. The foundation is committed to diversity and inclusion of people of all nations, races, ethnicities, creeds, colors, classes, genders, sexual orientations, ages, and people with disabilities in its programming, staff, management, committees, and governance.
Thank you. I have to digest that for a minute, but I realized that I skipped Jim. I skipped him on his request and then forgot to come back.
Thanks.
And I'm sorry, I'll come there as well. So the question, just if I can repeat it really quickly, was if you can share really briefly what your take on the position of this organization is.
Well, the position of this organization is not good. You know, we have a lot of problems, and they're reflecting themselves. These problems are now being reflected in our financial situation. So we have to, you know, our very survival is now an issue due to our non-sustainable functioning. And if I could just add a few other points of Pacifica's longer-term issues. There's the classic Pacifica dynamic is programmers that say, I'll help you keep your show if you help me keep my show. This has been repeated many times in many different stations. It's something of a truism. It doesn't happen all the time, but there's some truth there. So what happens is factions form to protect airtime for different groups, and so our network is quite factionalized. This is made for a very toxic and environment. you know, we drive away a lot of good people because it's so toxic here. Another issue is it's a related issue, even though we're five stations. We, in many ways, refuse to really act like a network and share programming. Mm-hmm. It's typically difficult for stations to agree to air programming that's not doesn't originate there. Once again, this doesn't happen all the time, but it's a notable feature. So even though we call ourselves a network, we really don't share programming to the degree that a real network would. And the final point I'd like to make with regard to our governance, I agree that our governance structure has problems, but Pacifica, in my view, was screwed up before the new bylaws came, and it's still screwed up now. So the real source of these issues, I think, has to go beyond an examination of our governance structure, but really has to go to how the stations work to management, how they're managed in issues like that. So thanks.
Thank you. So that was really very, very thorough. That's a really good summary of the management stuff. Ma'am?
I think that Pacifica is in the throes of attempting to decide, being forced to decide whether or not it's in fact going to be a network or continue to be five stations or fiefdoms. It's going to realize its mission by maturing as a lifeline instead of a commodity. And that, the institutional structure and process will be respected and mature so as to allow it to be able to do that, because the governance, as cumbersome as it may be, as inconvenient and as uncomfortable as it is at points for us individually, is designed to constrain the human foibles which undermine the mission of the Pacifica Foundation and its network.
I'm sorry, can you just repeat your last sentence for me? You may not remember it as is, but I just want to get it.
Governance is critical without regard for how cumbersome it may be, how inconvenient it is for us individually.
Great.
It is necessary and was put in place to constrain the human foibles, such as the corruption that you have repeatedly heard around this table, and to assure certainly increase the probability of the foundation realizing its mission.
Thank you. Did I miss anyone else? Did anyone else come back to their seats? Oh, I was going to, you know what? Would you just tell me your impression, if you feel comfortable?
Yeah, Richard, come on.
Little democracy in action.
I thought, as I was listening to all the other folks talk, two things came to my mind. One, probably most of y'all have seen the movie Men in Black. The cat had a necklace that was a galaxy. This network is a galaxy. This network has so many potentials to do such great things that we don't know what it is. But another analogy that came to my mind, and NASCAR racing is probably not a big thing with most folks in here. But if you think of that galaxy out there making laps as a race car, and all the teams that it takes to put a race car out there making laps, and God knows how many for a galaxy. All of us have great jobs as team members, but we want to get in the goddamn car. Get out of the car and let the car go on.
A beautiful metaphor for the difference between governance and management that I will probably steal and use furthermore when I'm training. But thank you very much. We spent a little more time doing this than I thought we would, but I actually think it was really helpful to me in terms of getting a pulse on where there's agreement, where there's not. If it works for the group, what I'd like to do is change up my plan, actually kind of articulate a framework for change management, and talk about in each of the pillars of that framework where I heard agreement and disagreement, and have you tell me whether or not, or tell each other whether or not that's true. Does that kind of make sense? Okay, trust the process. That's what we'll do. We'll trust. We're winging it, but we'll trust the process. Okay, so, because what I had planned to do was talk about where you wanted to get to, but the truth is you really articulated where you want to get to, right? There's this massive opportunity to be creating, you know, social change in our community and creating, you know, economic justice and, you know, deconstructing racism and sexism and homophobia, and you want to be at the forefront, right, of driving that forward, right? And you want to have institutions that are doing that are sustainable and manageable and compliant. So that's kind of what I'm working off of as a summary. Anybody want to challenge that summary? It's okay. They're too tired to challenge the summary.
No, we're not. It was a good summary.
I will make you stand up and do jumping jacks, so you probably don't want to say that. Yes?
I think what I heard was that this is...
Can't hear you.
Can't hear you.
I think what the common thread was that this was to be a venue for those ideas,
right.
A network for those ideas, as opposed to the organization that goes out and any of those isms, it is a venue to...
Go. Yeah, go there.
It's a venue, it's a media network, as opposed to an organization that's devoted to... stopping war or stopping anything. It's supposed to be a venue for activism within our country, our community, et cetera.
Right, so what...
I am. It's not on.
So what I...
It needs to be a bit closer to you.
Actually, I lost my mic, too. But I am freakishly loud.
No, you're on.
Is it back?
The thing is, it's going out to the world.
You just can't get in front of that.
Oh, that's good to know at this juncture. So what I want to say is, in terms of a change management process, how many people have you guys been through a change management process with other organizations you're a part of, like formalized, structured? You have. So some of you have. Great. So there's 100 frameworks. It's just like training. There's 100 different frameworks that you could use. The one that most change management consultants use is, they say basically, you know, there's 4 things you have to have in place to be able to drive a mission forward, right? You got to have the right people, you got to have the right culture, you got to have the right programs and services, and you have to have the right operational system. But what is right? What is right is that they're all aligned with each other and they all effectively move the mission forward. And the concept is those four pillars are actually based on agreement around values, right? And agreement around vision. Where are we going? Where are we trying to get to? So, sure. People, culture, organizational culture is what I'm referring to there. Programs and services, what you deliver, that people are willing to pay for it and use it, and think it's important. And systems and operations. Systems and operations are what show you the hole in the boat that I was talking about, but they're generally the symptom, often, of problems with the two, which are people and culture. And I want to kind of take this out of a frame of the right people, the wrong people, the right culture, the wrong culture. Because your need as you grow, as you go through different life cycles and as an organization, as you find yourself in different environments, what you need out of a culture and what you need out of your people and what you need out of your programs and services shifts, right? So it's really not about you have the wrong people. You know, it's maybe the people that, if this is even true, and I'm not articulating, but if you were articulating about people, you'd say, you know, are these people the best people to move our mission forward right now in this situation? I'll give you an example. I worked with a major health clinic, and they basically were going to build a massive clinic. You know, so they were going through a capital campaign, and 80% of their board resigned. I'm not encouraging any of you to do that, but 80% of their board resigned. 20% of their staff changed over because they were going through a different phase. They needed to be doing different things. They needed different skill sets, and they were in a different environment. So there's no value judgment on people being right or wrong. Okay, so of those four pillars, well, let's talk about the base of the pillars first. Values, how do you, I actually heard a lot of agreement around values, right? What were the values that were articulated? Social justice. Fairness. Right, potential, optimism. Democracy. Realized potential. Over there, Susan, I'm sorry.
When do we get to mention where we have differences? And can he stop his background music, please?
Yeah, it's not nearly as groovy as the other person's song.
I see a fundamental difference between, I think that what Sherry identified is, are we a platform for providing a voice? Oopsie. For different points of view, for expertise, whatever, or are we the change agent itself, a quasi-government, if you will? So I see that as a place where there's a real difference of opinion, at least as it translates into action.
Okay. Yep.
I'm having a little trouble understanding whether when we are talking about us, whether we are talking about Pacifica, the foundation, or whether we're talking about the board.
Who articulates that those two things are who thinks those two things are fundamentally separate? You think they're fundamentally separate?
No, I think we are foundation. We are the board.
Over here?
I think that it's sort of an interdependent system. The board is not fundamentally separate from the function of Pacifica, but because we're talking about radio stations that are in different parts of the country providing a service of radio, that's very different than what the board is doing, which is trying to organize and create this interlinked sustainable system. So there's an interdependence. I don't see any component of it as being all. The stations are not all of Pacifica. The board is not all of Pacifica. And the listeners, you know, they're a component of Pacifica too. So I don't think any one of us can say that we are alone Pacifica.
I think there are two different things.
You think that? So articulate that for me.
I think the board is a board. We know what that is. Like yes is yes means yes and no means no. But Pacifica is a combination of the boards, of the LSBs, of the staff and the stations and the listeners. I think it encompasses all of those different things and probably some I haven't even thought of.
So what I would say is that you actually can't articulate from a legal standpoint what your role is in relationship to Pacifica.
Governance.
Right. But you have certain legal obligations. So you are stewards of the public trust, right? You're elected stewards of the public trust. So, and we always kind of hold out a higher hope and standard for being an elected steward of a public trust in the nonprofit sector than elected steward of the public trust in the political sector. We always kind of really want better kind of for what we call the social sector as opposed to the public sector. But your role in that, your role in terms of ensuring legal compliance, in terms of protecting the mission, in terms of ensuring sufficient assets, and both in terms of leadership locally and nationally and in terms of capital, that's just articulated for you. The Attorney General of every state in which you operate articulates that. So it's the things in excess of that, right, that you struggle with. And the only thing in excess of that, really, there are two that come up for boards. And one is, what is our role as an advocate? Right, so out in the community as a spokesperson, boards decide that for themselves. Because boards, and this is a weird thing, boards are self-governing entities, right, except for the election. And then the other piece is, what, if any, role in management do we have? Right, and you kind of get to articulate that, although there's very good research and data that encourages that role to be minimal. and to really be hiring and staffing and supervising and overseeing the very best people and the best talent. So what I would say is you're actually occupying space in each of those four pillars, right? Because in people, your people, you provide the leadership and the oversight, right? So how good are you doing? How good are you at how good are you at it? How successful, right? How impactful? And the same kind of questions we'd ask staff. And then you'd also look at the board in terms of operations. Well, the operations that the board generally oversees are major capital issues, space, technology, major technology investments, and what's the other big one?
Program.
Finances.
Oh, finances.
Finances. Are you building, I mean, it's not, organizations don't have fundraising problems, and they don't have just cost-cutting problems. And it's not like every nonprofit that's having problems, including you, is pork-laden and can just be affording to lay off massive numbers of people without having to make really hard choices about what you can do, right? The issue is your model. It's your business model. Either the logic model works or it doesn't. And I think what's hard for us is that something can work for 10 years, right? And then because of something like a change in the competitive environment in which you work in, which is something that wasn't articulated as kind of a reality of your position, but I think would have been if we'd all spent 2 days thinking about it, that has a huge impact on you. You're in competition with the private sector that's picking up more and more of the progressive, you know, the progressive news cachet. So, you know, that's kind of how I would silo you, that you're kind of in all four of those things, but that there's other things there in each of those, too, that are equally important. Obviously, the listeners, and actually not even the listeners and the non-listeners, the citizens, the taxpayers, are the primary stakeholder in the foundation, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Does that make sense? I know why it doesn't make sense out here. So even if I don't listen to public radio for whatever reason, or I don't listen to your public radio for whatever reason, I have a stake in ensuring that the organization is well-managed and well-run because you're a tax-exempt institution. And the fact that people can give you money and not pay taxes impacts me as a taxpayer. That's the government's kind of standpoint. That's kind of the position of why it's publicly held and not just held by the membership. Okay. Obviously, the members and then the people who listen are the kind of backbone on which the programming is successful or not.
Melissa?
Yep.
I would just add that also the FCC license is also another element of the governmentally right. provided public trust.
Right.
Right.
And I know nothing about the FCC license, so that's good. I won't have anything to say. Okay, so people. People. Let me just check the time where we're at. Okay, we got about an hour. People. Where I heard agreement is this. Tremendously committed people, right? That's what I heard. Tremendously committed people, people with a lot of skills, a lot of capacity that are not being fully utilized. Right? And people who maybe do not have the best, some of that may be skill sets, but that are challenged in the role of, that are challenged in group decision making and in how to make group decisions. I heard that, and I want to know if that's consistent or.
Can you explain what, I'm not exactly sure what you mean.
Yeah, that y'all really struggle with coming to agreement in a way that leaves people feeling heard and respected and in which you're able to move forward, right? And I saw I've only been here a couple of hours, but I saw some symptoms of that. I didn't see anything major, but it's not unusual. And it's more, you see it more and more the more deeply committed and passionate people are, right? So it's kind of this counterintuitive thing, but the more you care, the harder it is to compromise. Right? That makes total sense. So it requires kind of a real commitment by the group to create models, I think, for what that compromise looks like and what the methods are and how you capture and respect the minority opinion in a way that people feel like they can move forward and depersonalize the process, right? So I heard that. I heard disagreement around whether or not you have all the right staff in all the right positions. I heard some people articulating, not specific staff people, but just in general, we have all the right staff, we're just not supporting them correctly. And I heard other people saying, you know, we have staffing challenges and staffing problems.
Yeah, I think that there may be a distinction in that I think that there's a general feeling that there are a lot of, you know, very good people on the air, technical people, whatever. I just know from my watching things, we have an IED currently in the 6 years or however much it is. We have had, I would imagine, professional IED maybe half that time. So that is just an indicator to me that we have trouble hiring, retaining, deciding on who we want to vest that trust in.
I think you hit upon something that is our biggest problem above and beyond anything else, and as far as the board is concerned, and that is depersonalizing what happens here. Because what I find happens here is that we have a discussion about something, we come to a resolution, and then if I happen to be on the side that didn't get what I want, that I don't then move on and say, okay, we've resolved that, I'm not happy with it, but it's a democracy and I move on, then we then don't buy into the concluded result. And the problem with that is that sometimes it makes us have to redo things or takes away our impetus to work on the next thing because we felt like, well, I'm not getting any love here.
and love, by the way, and appreciation for what we do is actually one of the basic. Most anthropologists agree that people actually can't be productive in a civilization unless they have three things, and one of them is the appreciation of the people they're living and working with. I'm going to come over here for the next question, but I want to follow up on that. No, you know, I'm not going to follow up. I'm going to come over here for this question.
The question. Having heard what you have, I just wonder whether you've met another organization like this. In terms of, no, and I don't mean to demean what's happening. I'm talking about an organization that was set up, and I'm glad you mentioned the word democracy and moving on. An organization that was set up after the World War to provide an alternative to what was happening. So in essence, that organization was set up on deep principles. And I believe that those people who have come into it have some commitment to those deep principles. And I think that's one of the reasons that we find it difficult to compromise. And that's one of the reasons why when we define and we agree on rules, we do not like to see them being squandered. So there is a very... How shall I put it? There's a contradiction in terms when you are expected to compromise your position that you hold deeply, especially if you're in a minority and you feel very strongly about the majority going away from that principle, as it were. So I just wonder if you've ever met an organization like this one.
So I don't know if this will... do you have something? Because I'll come to you next.
Yeah, after. It's okay. Not related to that. Okay.
those actually link up really well. I don't know if this will make you happy or sad, but you're not unique. You're not unique. You're unique in specificity, radio, specifically what you're trying to do. But I'll give you two examples of sector-wide where similar things have been happening. One of them are free clinics. Right? Remember the heyday of the free clinic? Free clinics are over now. They don't work. Right? Nobody can run them. Nobody can manage them. It's depressing. Right? So they're moving their model to be kind of these sliding scale clinics where they're offering a percentage of their services at low fees and they're moving to a volunteer staff basis and all of these kind of things. But it took 15 years and hundreds across the country of failed clinics to kind of be able to articulate that the environment in which they were working, the cost of the service they were providing had changed so radically that the model, this beautiful model they'd built, they couldn't make it work. So that's one. The other one is kind of highbrow, but is really interesting, which are zoos. Zoos 60, 70 years ago were founded by veterinarians, right? And they were about care for animals, research, science, and biology, right? And those CEOs of those zoos didn't care if people ever came to the zoo. As a matter of fact, they would prefer that you not, because that's not why they were there. They were scientific institutions. About 20 years ago, the model started to evolve that if you wanted to have a zoo, it had to be an educational institution, right? And it had to have a social entrepreneurship component. And so we saw a bunch of zoos that moved from being academically funded, research funded, to being funded by corporations and big individual donors. And that trajectory was really, really challenging. So, I mean, there are hundreds of these cases. If you've been around more than 40 years as a subsector of the social sector, you've had to make this kind of change because the environment in which you're doing business makes change. What you want to hold on to is the value set, right? It's the reason you do it, not the how of how you do it. And I think that there was something here that I want to touch on, which was this kind of feeling of needing to compromise. I think if you lose a vote, right, politically, your vote on the president, your candidate doesn't win, you don't feel like you have to compromise, right? You feel like you lost, and that is horrible and wretched and depressing, and you're despondent for however long, but you don't feel like you have to compromise on it. And what we really need to do in terms of building into our organizations is say sometimes we win. We get our way. We get what we think is best, and sometimes we don't. And how can we hold respect and still have a voice? And what is the appropriate interval at which we can bring things up again? And how are we following up with a minority viewpoint? The reason that doesn't happen, I think, there's something to be gained by having a board that has difficulty making decisions, because decisions are risky endeavors, right? I think one of the things we encourage groups to do in a change management process is to articulate what they're getting out of the way they're working, right? What do you get out of it? Because you get something out of it, because if you didn't get something out of it, you wouldn't do it, right? Really. So what do you get out of it? Well, you kind of get to stay in comfortable ground. You know, you get to have the same conversations over and over again. You don't, and I'm not saying this about individuals on this board. I'm just talking about in general organizational psychology. You get to have the same conversations over and over again. You never, ever, ever have to change your mind, right? Because you're factionalized, right? So you're not really looking to build agreement. You're looking to win a point. So, you know, that's really comfortable. And you never have to assume massive amounts of risk or take responsibility for them, because what's happening is, well, the organization's struggling along, and it may fail, but it's not going to fail because of something I did, right? It's not going to fail because of a choice that I made or that I pushed forward or that I agreed to. And what I think is missing in organizations that are really held with a social change value, and something that's being written a lot about now, somebody wrote about this in the Stanford Social Innovation Review recently, is this kind of willingness to be in the front, like, you know, to be in the infantry of change, so to say, I have this crazy idea about how we can change this up and think about it differently. And it is risky and it is costly and it could fail and I'm going to look ridiculous if it does. But that's okay, because something has to be done. And I have enough trust in my colleagues that if my idea is wrong or foolish or can't be implemented, they'll come up behind me with new strategies or better strategies. And that's why it's kind of really important to have a board or a board of governance and management teams that really kind of trust each other. And we're different people. We come from different walks of life. We come from different states. What does that look like, and how do you figure out how to build trust? Isn't something we're going to be able to do today, but it is something that you're not really going to see a lot of change in decision making without figuring out what's the circle of influence in which we have trust of one another. You know, that's a big deal. Oh, I'm sorry.
That's
I'll come
okay.
back.
That's exactly what we're dealing with all the time. Staff tend to not trust the boards, and the boards tend to not trust the staff. Another fundamental problem that we haven't mentioned to you that you need to understand understand our organization is the big issue that we have here is what we have five radio stations that are self-contained entities, and we have this national board, and the big disconnect is the, whether the national is in control of the stations or not. You know, this is what we've been arguing about the whole weekend in one way or another. And so it's just something that I wanted to throw out there to make sure.
Thank you very much. How is it right now? Are you in control of the affiliates or not?
Melissa?
Yep. I'm sorry. I will use the microphone and speak normally into it. Are you in control of the affiliates now or not?
Stations.
I'm sorry, the stations.
Yeah, we own them all, so that's different. We have affiliates, too, that are stations that are related to us, but...
But you're articulating that that's the disagreement about whether
yes.
or not you control them or they control themselves?
Yes.
There's another layer here that I think we not that we've glossed over it, but
that
needs to be made, I think articulated.
Use the mic, Carol.
Oh, sorry. That you know that if you've read the bylaws. We have an unusual agreement, and it came about in an attempt to get the bylaws passed, and that is that staff members are represented on the board, which is, I understand, unusual in many organizations. And so you have a layer of interest that differs. So people who are not only representative of the staff, but actually staff members themselves, in other words, they have radio programs. So in making a decision that affects the entire foundation, they're making a decision that intimately affects themselves as well. And that is only some of the members. And so there is that divide, and that's an underlying current that's constant.
Okay, and I think that clearly falls into a board responsibility for articulating articulating a conflict of interest policy and who makes this. That's your job. You articulate that. You hold people accountable to that. You remove them from activity and votes if they have a standing conflict.
Done. No, can't be done.
I'm sorry?
It isn't done.
Well, okay, but I understand there's a lot of things that are not happening here, right? There are a lot of things that are not happening here that if we tried to address them piecemeal, we're not going to be able to resolve them. What we need to resolve is how do we get people around this table that trust each other and trust themselves to remove themselves from a process if they can't be holding the mission. And there are strategies for that which we can discuss. I took your question because I knew it followed up on this one and I wanted to wrap it up, but I think there's a separate question over here.
Actually, it was also a follow-up to Wendy's. And to something you said, you discussed, and I think it's important to say this, you discussed people who lose votes and how they move on from that. I think we also need to discuss people who win votes and how they behave in that situation. We do have a divided board here with a strong majority and a fewer minority. And I'm not going to articulate that question. I'll leave that to you since you characterized those who lose votes. No, she did too. She discussed, you know, compromising and moving on and going on to the next vote. I believe there's also some particular behaviors to people who win votes. The other thing I'd like to pile on with Wendy about is that we have not articulated our visions and values to each other, and we each hold them very clearly, and we could articulate them to ourselves very clearly. It's not a matter that we're unclear on where we stand on these issues. We each know, and we're not sharing that.
So the first thing is I want to thank you for bringing up that, because when I raised the issue of people who lose votes and need to kind of move on, what I was trying to get at was the idea that you should be able to hold your opinion and not feel like you have to compromise it. Like that you should be able to hold the minority opinion and not feel like you have a state of compromise. I do think that the way we move forward with any vote, with everybody kind of accepting the outcome but being respectful of the other opinions, is really, really critical. The reason I don't tend to raise that, and I'm going to own this right now, is I tend not to care too much from a personal standpoint about how people are feeling, which sounds horrible, but y'all are entrusted with a really sacred public trust. No, I know, but...
Speaking of behaviors on the board.
Right, so, but those behaviors lead to... you know, lead to people feeling disenfranchised, not listened to, frustrated, upset. I tend not to focus on that because it's not how I come at this. But they are, even though I tend not to focus on them, they are incredibly important, is what I was going to say. And I, well, you know what? I'm going to come back to you because it's clear I'm misrepresenting what you said. So would you like to follow up for me, please? And I'll come over here next.
I hate to be accusatory here, and I'm afraid I'm going to have to be to make my point clear.
Have at it.
There is a tendency here not to recognize people when they want to speak. There is a tendency here to call various Roberts rules on people that are not in the majority. There is a tendency here to dismiss any motion from people who are in the minority. This is not about feelings. This is about behaviors on this board.
So...
And I, forgive me, this is my characterization. We could go back and forth about this. I am asking our facilitator how to handle this if this is occurring. And I'll leave it as a conditional, folks. I'm not trying to accuse anyone. I didn't want to go into that kind of particularity.
So what I'll say is that there are a lot of governance consultants out there, and I'm one of them, who frame decision making, and you know, I'm not a big fan of Robert's Rules of Orders. If you've ever read about where it comes from, it's not exactly designed to encourage dissent and democratic decision making. But you can use it; it's a working system. But you also are at liberty, unless it's in your bylaws, to use it.
Bylaws.
All right, live with it. Sorry. So then you've got to basically set up a system of accountability, and that's a particularly challenging thing. But that's very separate from what I addressed, and I want to thank you for raising it. Here, and then I'm going to come over here.
Right. I'd like to associate myself with Leslie's first comment, that she's absolutely right. We've never really articulated what our own personal views and values are. That might be a very helpful thing to do. And also, I think she was correct in stating that just as the people who don't get their way have to know how to move on, the people that do get their way have to also be considerate of those who of the minority, so that it doesn't exacerbate whatever you know, that feeling of frustration that I'm not getting any love. But my biggest fear is this: that the board becomes like the Green Party. You know, it's got a great idea, and they're right. But when the country finally found out they were right, their voice was silent because they had no organization. And they were right 10 years before the country realized they were right, or 20 years before. So that's my biggest fear. And when I sit, look at this board, sometimes you can put up a motion, and I can predict before the votes start, before the debates start, just how the numbers are going to fall. And most of the time, I'm right. So this, and my big, and then what happens is, like religion and politics, you can talk about it and debate about it for hours, but at the end of the day, the votes still end up being the same, which means that we are not really listening. We've already had our mind set before the debate even started.
Thank you. I heard you, Susan, but I've got one over here, and then I'll come to you.
That was a very good point. But I hope that at some point, one or two of us would have divorced ourselves from the majority and go along with our gut feeling and commitment. But I want to follow up on Leslie's point. And I don't think Leslie should be apologetic for what she said. I think this is a session where we should bear it all. So she kind of opened a window for me. Because what happens here extends to the local station boards. And I have been in the position that Leslie actually described. And as we speak, I am faced with a motion to remove me from the local station board for my very strong dissent, means of dissent. And there were emails circulated around that I wrote, and those are the emails that are being used to remove me from the board. So although I hate to say it, I want to tell Leslie that I might be seen as a member of the majority, But on my local station board, I'm one of the minority. And they have gone one step beyond, where twice they have decided to use the majority vote, if they get it at all, to remove me from the board. I have not damned anyone. I have not, although it's been accused that I have called people names, I have not. I've been asking questions, and people are saying all she wants is question. So it's not just here. The culture is throughout the right. Five stations.
Right, and so what you're, and I'm coming over there, Susan. But what you're addressing, obviously, I don't have any. Those people are not here, and we can't flesh that issue out. However, well, some of them may be, but we still can't flesh that issue out because we're charged with a different body of leadership that's around this table today. I'm going to go to Susan, and then I'm going to come back one, two after Susan. I'll skip my comments.
Great.
Susan,
thank you. I'm very intrigued by what Leslie brought up, and I really think it goes to the core. What I mean by what she brought up is not Robert's rules and that, which I hate but are important, whatever. Anyway, is the question of when we went around the table, we all basically nodded at each other about, yes, you're right, I agree with that completely. But we clearly don't. And in our moment-to-moment actions as a board. And so I would like to hear Leslie articulate for us her perception of a value that she holds that is not shared or that she doesn't share or whatever, because I think we need to get into those.
Okay, so I'm actually, that we are going to get into that, and you're going to go first, Leslie, but I'm going to follow up with these two comments, and then we'll move to this, since that seems to be what you all are ready to do. Here, Jim?
Yes, thanks. I just wanted to not lose Wendy's comment about whether we're a national organization or five separate stations. I think that's key. You know, there's a very good book, in my opinion, about Pacifica Network by Matthew Lazar called Uneasy Listening, and he made a great point about the new bylaws. The hope was with, you know, the real power in Pacifica resides at the station, not at the national office, not with the national board. His hope was that these new elected boards, the board would be seen as a more legitimate body that could actually provide national leadership and help these five independent stations cohere into something more than they had been. Now, it remains to be seen whether that's – we've seen what – I mean, where we are, where we are. But the point that Wendy brought up about national versus local is actually very important to understand about, you know, the problems that we face right now and where we stand.
Thank you.
And along that same line, the point that Lizette makes is an important point also, because the reality is that the question has to be addressed. What is the function of the board member, the national board member? Does the national board member represent the parochial interest of his or her station, his or her position, as in the case of being a listener or being a staff person, or does that person represent and is called upon to serve the best interest of the foundation and thereby the network? And I deliberately use the word network because I believe that Pacifica is a network and not a collection of five stations to be bought and sold and bartered, as is the case at this point in time.
So the only thing before we move over here and have this values thing that I want to articulate is just that in general, when deciding what kind of structure you want for your organization, your business, your publicly held institution, whether you're faced with this issue, do you control these five or are they acting independently and you're just providing service to them? I think the most important thing is that you make a decision right? I mean, I'm sure one of those decisions is much better than the other. I would have no way of knowing, because I am not in a position to have looked at all the relevant information, which one would be better. But one of them is better.